Good morning, everybody. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Nemhauser, and happy to be with you and celebrating the middle of what feels like one of the like news deserts of the NFL offseason. We've just finished Seahawks rookie mini camp, and while the players are doing their thing this week at the VMAC, the true OTAs don't start till March 27th. So we've got a little bit of time between now and then, and between the draft and then, and there's no better person to spend that time with than our good friend Dave Bowling, who joins us for this this Wednesday. How are you doing this fine morning,
Mr. Bowling? Doing great, Brian. You really sold this as an exciting thing. We're in a news desert. There's nothing to talk about. People are just really, you know, going to call their friends. Get on this now. It's going to be great.
You know what, Dave? All I have to say is Dave Bowling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Flock. They come from everywhere. I'm not even joking, and this is not hyperbole. When I pulled into the Virginia Mason Athletic Center and walked onto the field, and I was already excited because it's my first mini camp, not your first mini camp, my first mini camp. And I saw the one, the only Dave Bowling standing there on the berm, and man, no joke, I was like, I'm going to get to hang out with Dave and talk about offensive linemen and Seahawks rookies. This is going to be a good day. And it was.
Well, perfect weather. And, you know, I think so often, I think last year I did a column, no, 2 years ago when Pete was still here, about what that headquarters location does for luring free agents. And at the end, when you start talking to the rookies, well, what do you think of this place? Every one of them, especially the guys from the American South, where it's 110 degrees or something, they're out there right by the lake, and they just start loving it. And you think back, that was a reclamation mill site that Paul Allen bought. And how many millions and millions of dollars could he have made if he put up big luxury condos?
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of a funny site. It's narrow, but certainly could have done view condos and made a zillion dollars on it. And I think it was him and Lewicki who decided to do that. They could have put that headquarters in Sammamish or somewhere where land was cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But every one of those guys just absolutely loves it. And I think, you know, sometimes when it comes to free agency, they think about it. So I used the Dateline and the Renton Riviera
for that
column, because it does really feel like an oasis out there.
That's such a great point, and I think it's a point that a lot of people miss, because I don't know about you, Dave, but I think that a lot of Seahawks fans, their love of the team is also inextricably mixed with their love of the Northwest and this region and being proud of it. And to have a Seahawks headquarters that showcases that, it almost becomes this divining rod of when a player, I like asking players, so, you know, what are your first impressions? And if the first thing they start talking about is, oh my God, like, we are practicing on the water, I think, okay, this is one that may want to come back here. If they don't really glow about it, probably not here,
you know,
for
that,
the long
that time. Northwest connection goes back to the first owners, to the Nordstroms.
Mm-hmm.
And they were smart enough to understand that. And they made it part of the community. And Paul Allen did the same thing and recognized the value of that. In between, during the lamentable Baring ownership, there was such an alienation that they had gone from having a 30,000 list of people who wanted to be on ticket sales to bringing maybe 35,000 into the kingdom. And so much of it was, well, they weren't very good because of bad management, but also because there was a real significant alienation over the ownership.
100%. Yeah, it was a really dark time for what has been a franchise that's had some pretty high moments, but that was a very dark
and such a key. And you look at bad franchises. So much of it's attached to ownership, and you know, are they cheap, or do they care about the fans, you know? And I think that's something that rates pretty highly for the Seahawks on now that they have ratings every year, and that kind of thing is important. Players see that, agents know this, and you know, maybe that alters the price tag a little bit. Maybe that lures how many great guys you have to win over, you know, to make a difference.
You really do. And to your point, you know, the report card, the players report card from the NFL Players Association, you know, that came out this past year. And one of the things that was lower graded for the Seahawks was their training room. And what is in the middle of being renovated right now? The training room. And all these stories that just persist about, well, maybe Jody Allen and Burt Cold are like, you know, tightening the purse strings and aren't really doing things. You know what, Dave, that is such a pile of garbage. I not only, you only see them investing, but I talked to the family members of some of these players, and they were all flown in, put up at beautiful hotels, put through trainings that doesn't happen at every NFL. This is a first-class organization. And I think people should stop trying to tear down, you know, Jody Allen.
I was talking to one of the, you know, just walking off the field, and one of the guys there was obviously a father of a player. Mm-hmm. And just the presumption, you know, and
yeah,
how he was watching and everything. And when we walked off, he said, "Boy, this is some place. We've been to a bunch of places, and there's nothing been like this." And then you add to that the way they treat the players too, and then what they bring their favorite Starbucks order.
Yeah.
You know, for after practice. And then they have their specially mixed power drink with the scientifically designed additives and supplements for each player and what they need. It's a lot different than football used to be.
Yeah, it sure is. And Dave, with that, I mean, this was not your first rookie minicamp. What is this? Your second?
They didn't really used to have rookie mini camps as such, but I was trying to add it up. I started covering the team in 1989 when I was over in Spokane and driving over and doing all those things. So, and I missed a couple years where I tried retirement and failed at it. So it's been 36 years over five decades. And, maybe 34 total training camps and seasons covering them. And you know, it's funny when I drive over there now, I live a little further away and I get nostalgic. I start thinking about some of the great times and the camps and the players and the stories and the people, you know, and coaches and players that you just really came to appreciate who they are. And you know, when you spend that much time with them, you kind of understand who's really the good guy and who is really good at that. And there are a lot of people in that franchise that have been extremely admirable over the years. And a blessing to be able to still be doing it now, you know, and still remember Chuck Knox's days out there. You know, those are pretty fun.
Well, with that amazing background and experience, I'm curious where your eyes went. What was your big takeaway from the 70 plus players that went out on the field this past weekend?
Talent top to bottom, as good as maybe ever. You know, you'll think of 11, 12 crews that came in. And I think this, And a lot of it is you look at the raw combine numbers and stuff and those athletic rankings. I don't, you know, put great value in those. I don't think those are ultimate arguments because it's who they are that, you know, some of those, Largent wasn't speedy. He didn't look good, you know, but some of the great players did not. Heck, I think, Zabel's probably got higher athletic ratings than Walter Jones did.
Maybe.
You know, but you just look at him and go, okay, this guy's really going to be something. Hutchinson, same thing. But I think just watching them on the hoof and seeing some of their accomplishments. But the thing that I came away having said, wow, a couple times. One was on the field when Milrose threw a little bit of a high pass and Elijah Arroyo just went up into the jet stream to pull it down.
Yeah.
And this guy looks like Kellen Winslow. I mean, either one, but I really think, you know, that was an interesting play where somebody just made that. He had a booster rocket when he went up. Mm-hmm. And the other thing was off the field, the interview with Jalen Milroe. I was so blown away by his maturity, his humility. This guy's been in a high-level public eye for a long time and so humble, just totally squared away, mature, talking about what he has to work on, you know, his lower body mechanics. He really has an understanding and self-awareness that is rare. Now, because he's the third-round quarterback, Russell Wilson was a third-round quarterback, I go back through the memory bank, and I remember Russell's rookie minicamp. I watched every snap and charted it. It was a 3-day camp then, and I figured he had something like 300, 400 snaps that he took. He was only quarterback then. And there was only one time they had to call the team back to the huddle because they weren't set up right. He was moving players around. He had such a command of that huddle. Now, he threw a great ball, deep, wide. And another thing that I think is a real indicator is his precision on like those little flare routes with the backs. And I find there's a difference between accuracy and precision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be on the guy, but where was the timing? And is it here or is it here?
Mm-hmm.
Those sort of things, you know, and you think of plays through the history. Sometimes the ball's been here and that's allowed a defender to jump it and get it. If it's here, there's no chance of that. And it's the sort of thing Matt Hasselbeck developed through his career. Mm-hmm. You could see it 5-6 years in when he would hit those just perfectly. And that's a precision that Milroe doesn't have.
Yes.
And he understands what it is, and he's working on it. And you could feel his leadership coming through his words when he was at that press conference. And we saw one time where his old Alabama teammate, Robbie Oots, false started, you know, and he yep. goes, hey, you know, and he kind of gets on him a little bit. He points at him.
Hey, bro. Yeah, he's like,
can't be doing this. No, it was just against air. And it was an early practice drill.
Yeah.
When Jalen Milroe says that, people are going to listen, even veterans, because this guy is really, really sharp and he's invested. He is not going to be Russell Wilson. Not yet, but he doesn't have to be. And in some ways, you know, that's going to be a very good thing. I was really knocked out by that guy, and I wanted to do a column about some of the snapshots of some of the great athletes, and it ended up being about Jalen Milroe because I was so impressed by him.
Yeah, I remember walking back from that press conference and you just saying, wow, like that's leadership.
You know, he reminded me his polish, it's different than veneer. There are some quarterbacks or people who are stars who have a veneer. Polish is a solid mineral that you can put a shine on it that has substance. Veneer is something that just shines,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
maybe without the substance. And you don't always know that right away. But Milroe had that, and Mike Robinson was there, our former fullback, of course, who's in the media. And I went, boy, you know, he kind of reminds me of RG3, Robert Griffin III, when he came out of college, a Heisman winner. And, you know, and he had a great, until he was hurt, he was Rookie of the Year. Mm-hmm. But his polish, you know, the way he could lead and you know, talk about the game was very similar to this kid, Milroe. So, and as we saw, sometimes his ball flutters a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not perfectly placed. Sometimes he is not hitting the guy perfectly in stride where it would be the most effective. But there's plenty of times when he is, too.
Well, you know, there's a couple of things you hit on there where you're talking about polish versus veneer, and I think an important piece with Jalen Milroe, because the comparisons with Russell are going to happen and comparisons with other quarterbacks, but Russell was a far more, I'm going to reuse the word in a different notion, but far more polished quarterback coming out. He was on the details. He had threw a really beautiful ball. He was all over
every part of the field.
Like, yeah, that was really like something he commanded. Jalen Milroe is much more raw in that regard, and there's things to be worked on there. On the other side, you know, Russell, I know this is not going to turn into a tearing down Russell show, but he has proven that he, from a relatability standpoint, that's not his strongest suit. And he has not had a lot of teammates that necessarily, like, you know, felt as strongly about him in the positive as some of these other quarterbacks. And I don't think that's going to be an issue with Jalen Milroe, because it's not just, he's not putting on an act. He's not trying to appear the way he thinks he's supposed to appear. He is generally being the person he is. And he is also pretty accountable to himself and to his teammates. The fact that he goes in there and Dave doesn't request, or at least doesn't push, to get the number 4 from the punter, I think that's a bigger statement than people realize, that a well-known Alabama quarterback does not say, hey, you're the punter, give me my number.
It's huge. And the whole thing, he said, he, when he listed his mission statement, you know, to earn the respect of every person in this building, everybody on the team, everybody in the huddle, everybody on the team, every person in the organization. Real, real awareness. Now, again, I thought Russell Wilson was obviously a key cog in the golden age in this team. And he was ready, and he did earn that job. Just a little, and you know, he came out of college, what, he was 33 with 6 interceptions, 33 TDs, 6 interceptions for Wisconsin, Rose Bowl. This kid really had shown the goods far more.
Yes.
Than Jalen has. When, before the season started, Russell Wilson's rookie year, he had a jeans endorsement, advertisements, before anybody knew who he was. Somewhere, obviously, his manager and he, maybe the spouse, whatever, were working on these sorts of things away from the football team. Jalen Milroe says, my commitment is to earn the respect of everyone in the organization.
And
I think, do you weigh those two? They're different people, different times, different talents, all that. Russell Wilson did a lot of good in this community. And I think there was a great deal of sincerity in a lot of the things that he did. I felt that maybe he didn't have that self-awareness sometimes when he was taking videos with the kids or what have you. And not to bat, I'm one of the people that still appreciate those early years and don't let some of the things later on discolor those.
Yeah.
This kid is really something. Does he turn into something else? Hey, everybody can. Who knows? The thing that I look at, both his parents were military officers. Mm-hmm. the discipline. Here's a guy with all this talent. Frankly, these days, you don't have to have a good grade point average. I don't know that you really have to go to classes anymore. I'm not convinced you really have to put in a lot of work if you're at Alabama and you're the starting quarterback. He has a 3.8 or something. He's got a master's degree already. I see discipline written all over this guy.
Yeah.
And boy, I think you put him in the game. And as we've noted, the things that separate him, the things that make him an outstanding prospect, cannot be seen when it's not live action, when it's just going skelly or 11 on 11 with no pads on. We can't see him operate under pressure. All you have to do is look at, pull up a highlight reel of his time at Alabama and see what he can do when the pocket breaks down. That's something he's going to have to figure out. And how does that fit in? But I think this guy's going to be used this year. He will get some snaps at quarterback somehow in some sort of situation. And I think he's going to be a heck of a quarterback as time goes on.
Well, it's funny. And we're talking to Dave Bowling, the great Dave Bowling, as I think of him. And one of the things we also, you know, heard from Jalen Milroe, I had asked him about the virtual reality training, and he confirmed that they're doing that. And I got to show you a juxtaposition that made me laugh. So I'm going to show you some video here. This is John Benton, the offensive line coach. And watch what he does here. Watch his feet. He is measuring the distance in splits by putting foot over foot. And if you talk to John Benton, talk about a guy that is probably the least likely to ever use virtual reality for any sort of training. It is this man. So you go from
this much makes a difference.
It does, right?
Because if somebody's playing inside eye technique, head up technique, outside eye technique on defense, an inch makes a big difference in the hole that's available for the back to run through. And also, when somebody misses it, he'll get on him. But he also stopped. I watched him one time. He stopped and said, "Okay, this was really cool. You guys did this. He made this adjustment. You made that adjustment." It was a beautiful thing to watch, because offensive line coaches will love to chew your hide.
Yes.
That's just who they are. And this guy stopped and said, "Wait a minute. This was beautiful. I loved it." I think that's going to be a difference.
I want to talk to you about that. I have to tell you a quick story. On day two, it was not sunny. It was a little bit rainy and a little bit overcast. And I happened to be walking out of the media room onto the field, and there's John Benton near the blocking sleds by himself. And I was like, "Hey, coach," you know, I put my hands in the air, "welcome to the Northwest," you know, smiling. And his response was just like a, it was like, this guy, you know, he could wear an eye patch and a pirate hat. Like he is not going to be the warm, cuddly, you know, guy. And I'm not so sure they don't need that in that locker room.
They absolutely do. Hey, you know what? Cable had some ideas that I thought were, you know, I didn't always buy who he was selecting to play what positions, right? Anything like that. Hell of a coach. He's proven over the years, hell of a coach. There have been good coaches, don't always fit what they need. There's a lot that goes into it. But the guys they got on the offensive line this time are fabulous. They all look like Big Ten linemen.
Yes.
They're all from the Midwest.
Yeah.
They have Big Ten quality bodies. Okay, now that means something. Over the years, every neighborhood in Chicago had one Big Ten lineman that they produced, you know.
Yeah.
and it was just through the years, these guys, you know, they're going to be great. Steve Hutchinson, perfect example. And these guys, when you get down to fifth, sixth, seventh round, okay, you're going to get guys who are not Big Ten, haven't played Big Ten. You get the guys who probably could have by the time the end of their career. That's where you can stock up on them. And I got to pull out the quote, and I got it, Mason Richmond. Okay, what's seventh rounder out of Iowa? You get a starting tackle from Iowa. That guy's going to know how to particularly run block. His interview, he ends that up. Somebody says, hey, you know, you got these three guys, you know, you're going to be, you know, you're going to be buddies or whatever. You know, it's something about the camaraderie with these three guys. And he says, yeah, after this, we're all going to go eat a bunch of food, gain weight so we can push people around. Should be a lot of fun. And I thought, I almost started clapping there in the press conference. I wanted to say, you captured it. You have explained your job perfectly.
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah. And it's not, he's not looking for some contract. He's trying to get bigger so he can push people around more effectively. I love that.
I love you call that out. And Dave, I want to hear from you because I'll tell you this. If you put your hand over the draft pick, knowing where they were picked, and you just look at the three linemen, Mason Richmond, Bryce Cabledue, and Gray Zabel, my read was these guys all looked like starting quality offensive linemen. Maybe not all this year, but they all looked like that. It did not look like
they're all going to put on 10 pounds before the season starts, okay?
Do you agree that they didn't, like, Cabledue and Richmond didn't look like sixth and seventh round picks?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, they look better than some. When James Carpenter came to camp, he looked like he was winded running from jogging from from the headquarters out to the far field. He did not look fit. Maybe he had something going on, give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he wasn't feeling good or whatever. He did not have the energy. He would, you know, you want to see that in a first rounder. John Moffitt from Wisconsin did not show much at all about being ready to play offensive line in the NFL. Pretty high draft pick. Yeah. You know, these guys are athletic. Let's see, I think it was Cabledue. Boy, has he got some quads on him. You know, this guy is doing a lot of squats. You know, very impressive. Does that make him a great lineman? Not necessarily. But what you see is the frame, and I can just envision 10 years or 10 pounds by training camp, 15 by next season, and body mass index trimmed. These guys are athletes. The fact that Zabel, Gray Zabel, has almost a 37 inch vertical jump.
Unbelievable.
Now he's 310, maybe
315.
315. Okay. He can be 330. And they say, okay, do you want a tackle that can dunk? Is that important? Well, our guard. No, of course not. But that is one of the great indicators of explosiveness, explosive power to, you know, to get that rocket ship off the launch pad like the way he can. And that's damned impressive.
I came away watching Gray Zabel move and just feeling like I was already high on this guy, but I left.
Well, you saw him at the Senior Bowl, right?
I saw him at the Senior Bowl, saw him at the Combine. He moves differently. He moves people differently, even in those blocking drills. The amount of explosion and the push that he was getting, it's just drills, it's position drills, but he did it differently than everybody else.
Yeah.
So
I can see that. And the other thing John Schneider and McDonald both pointed out the Senior Bowl where he was looking for reps. He was stealing reps from other guys because the defensive guys wanted to go against him. Now, what does that tell you? That kind of thing don't lie.
No, it does not.
And he's not saying I kicked ass and I did this and I did that. You know, people watch it. They understand. Now that's a value. How do you put value on something like that? Hey, you know what? He may not pan out. There could be 100 things that could go wrong. to me, he looks like he's got the basic foundation of a great offensive lineman in the NFL.
Yeah.
Now, what happens now? Does he build on it? He was picking rocks, you know, at the farm. He knows what a day's work is.
Yeah.
And I was told that there was a chance of bringing him in as the number one draft pick a day before. Could you, you know, and get him the next day for the press conferences or whatever? And he said, could we put that off until the last minute? I got work to do on the farm. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, that kind of sticks in your head. He's not going to be calling in sick for on game day.
Dave, I told you I'd keep you for 15 or 20 minutes. I've already kept you for half an hour. Can I ask push sure. one more question?
Yeah.
I honestly could talk to you for hours, but I'll probably break it into two. But really, one, you mentioned Elijah Arroyo and you mentioned the Kellen Winslow comp. Why Kellen Winslow?
The body. I'm talking about Kellen Winslow, the elder.
Yes,
mostly.
Yes.
The other one brought some baggage.
Yes.
The elder, he had a smoothness about him. Maybe Antonio Gates had that a little bit too. But mm-hmm. how many tight ends to Tony Gonzalez? You know, there's some people who are just spectacular athletes. He looks so smooth in his stride. He's got a long stride. He can sustain his speed through the breaks. Sometimes long striders can't hit the break hard. This guy looked really good. There was a couple, one on a crossing pattern, one that was a deep ball that Milroe hit him, and it just went all 10 fingertips, no palms, full stride, touchdown. It's against air.
Yeah.
Okay. That shows you what he can do. There's another one that I think, and because all the music and all the yelling and stuff, you can't hear this as much as you used to. But in the old days, you know, when it was just coaches and players, you could, when you watch Steve Largent, there was a noticeable difference. His hands absorbed the ball. And you couldn't hear leather touching palms or flesh. It was like the ball was going to a place it wanted to be. And I know that's over metaphorizing.
Great.
But. Yeah. That's how it was when he caught the ball, you know. And I think this guy has that kind of hands. And you look at his body, boy, he can really get. Does he block? I don't know. He's going to have to be a willing blocker. But even if he doesn't, spread him out. Give him some flex. All of a sudden, he is a huge mismatch. And he gave evidence of his catch radius on that one over the pass, which was pretty fearsome. But I think he has some kind of his physical conformation seems similar to Winslow. But that's what I thought when I first saw him.
All right. Last thing, Dave. Vegas over under win total is 7.5 for the Seahawks.
Don't understand it at all.
Seahawks is last in the division. They won 10 games last year in Mike McDonald's first year. They had but top 10, you know, defense top five for the last part of the year. I am not objective. I don't claim objectivity. I'm a Seahawks fan as well as a reporter. Do you look at this team and what you see? Do you see this as a team that's going to take a step back this year?
I do not. And I would say I try very hard to be objective in most cases, but I see this team more than I see other teams. I don't watch every other team as closely. I was astonished to see that 7.5, and I didn't have a column for that day, but I went on to write, I'm not a gambler, but this sure looks like a lock to me at this point. If you could put down money on the Seahawks going over 7.5, I would think certainly. You look at the first half of last season, that was a bottom third team. Once they make the changes, and this was huge, and I know however long I cover this team, I'm going to look back at the changes they made in the middle of last season because they couldn't afford to not make them, to wait till the end of the season. I mean, that would be your natural course of events. We can't, you know, boy, how do we do it? How do we dump some guys? They're not making tackles. Oh my God, what that had to do to the mindset in that locker room. And a front office says, okay, and coaching staff, we've got to make this change. It's too late. And they win 6 of the last 8. Maybe the last one was a gimme. And games that they lost where they couldn't punch across a 4th and 1.
Mm-hmm.
The way they've addressed that, and not even talking about Robbie Utz yet, my favorite, I think, of the bunch. I think that's huge. Okay, Gino. Yeah. DK, he was marvelously talented. I am not lamenting that departure. I don't know they have enough manpower right now to compensate. I know there are schematic ways to maximize what they have now. And certainly a running attack and maybe a little bit better. So you get 10% better protection. Makes a huge difference when this team was 1 4th and 1 conversion, maybe away from beating the Rams in overtime and winning the division.
You know, Dave, I think a lot of people thought the Seahawks had a Ferrari with DK Metcalf and Geno Smith and that offense. What they really had is a Miata, and it was capable of some high speeds, but man, it didn't handle crashes well, didn't handle contact well, and it wasn't a dump truck, and it wasn't a bulldozer. And I think that what they've made as a commitment, what Mike Donald wants, is he wants a tank. Like, he wants something that he knows can get the yardage.
Give me a Volvo. It may not be pretty, but man, that sucker's going to run forever.
It's going to run forever, and you're going to know what it's going to do every morning.
It's going to start.
So it's going to be fun. We'll continue to have these conversations with you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your morning.
You bet.
And where should folks find what you're working on next?
Oh, I'm getting a little time off, but I had a couple of draft columns and a rookie minicamp columns in the Spokesman Review the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, check out Dave's work at the Spokesman Review. It's great stuff over there. And Dave, have a great rest of your day. All right, that was Dave Bowling. Spent way more than 15 or 20 minutes with us. It was very nice of him. And that's the thing is, you know, DK Metcalf now in Pittsburgh with George Pickens getting traded to the Cowboys, it sounds like. That's not surprising that Pickens is going to be gone. They were somewhat redundant players. And it does explain a little bit why the Cowboys didn't go receiver with their first draft pick and, you know, went Tyler Booker. But I mean, DK Metcalf, I hope he gets what he wanted. I really do. But to have essentially forced his way to Pittsburgh, he could be in New England right now. That is like they wanted him there. He's got, would have had a good young quarterback. He would have had a good new coach. Well, new to New England. Would have had all this free agency moves that they have made in New England, Milton Williams and others, all the draft picks, the best, one of the best drafts. Most people think it was the best draft of this 2025 class. That's an up and coming New England team. And DK Metcalf would have been an ideal addition to that team. And I also would have meant the Seahawks would have had one of the top picks in the 2nd round had they been able to trade him to New England instead of Pittsburgh. Instead, he forces his way to Pittsburgh and it's going to have probably will have Aaron Rodgers throwing to him. People think that that's somehow a good thing. I think it's a significant downgrade from what he's had throwing it to him throughout his career, to be honest. And I don't know, man. I don't know what that's going to look like for DK Metcalf. I sure as heck don't think Pittsburgh fans are going to handle some of his flaws very well. And it'll be interesting to watch that unfold. But now you step back and you see what those moves, the Geno Smith, DK Metcalf moves have meant for this team. And what most people outside of Seattle see as this big signal of going into a transition year or a rebuild year or whatever you want to call it. But you, for Geno Smith and DK Metcalf, you have now replaced that with Sam Darnold, Cooper Kupp, Marquez Valdez-Scantling. What ended up being Nicky Minwori and Jalen Milroe and cap space. And I no part of me wishes ill on either Geno or DK. I hope they do really well, especially Geno. I was always a big Geno fan, and I think he's going to do great with Pete. But I think if you look at the Seahawks and the moves they made, I feel like it is a really wise set of moves. And I think moves that could end up being epically positive moves for this franchise. So lots going on with the Seahawks. Great to hear from Dave. Great to hear the historical comparisons of Elijah Arroyo to Kellen Winslow. I heard that from actually more than one person. I think, man, Dave is such a wordsmith. Everything he says, whether he's written or speaking, I feel like is poetry. So great hearing from him. Interesting his takeaways relative to Jalen Milroe as a leader. And then also, you know, I think he sees what I see in the offensive linemen. It was a different group. I'm really looking forward to seeing them with the other veterans and seeing how they look next to the other veterans, how they move next to the other veterans. And that'll give me a better feel for handicapping who's going to come out on top. I don't think Mason Richmond is as long of a shot to make this roster as I would have expected as a seventh round pick. The guy has started 1,000 games at Iowa. Like, you don't do that without having some talent. And I don't know, man. I thought there was something there. Bryce Cabledew is a guy that I just have been big on for a while. There's nothing I saw that changed my mind there. I'm not going to be shocked if he pushes for starter snaps. Like, that's a huge, crazy thing to say for a six-round pick. It won't shock me if that happens. Of course, there's a long way to go. We got to see how these guys do with pads and with, you know, and all the other guys that also have, you know, been putting in work over the offseason, and we'll see how they look in John Benton's zone scheme. But these guys look like guys that were picked by John Benton and Rick Dennison and this staff to fit what they want to do because they fit really well. All right, we've got a super chat here from Eric Kinneman. Says, great conversation today. Thank you for the very generous super chat. Appreciate you, Eric. That was very nice of you. Also saw a nice comment earlier that I wanted to highlight. If I can find it real quick. But if you haven't given the show a like and click subscribe, please do. And give the show a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you're listening to it. Sabin's Sense Studio says, thank you, Brian. Put my 5-star review and appreciate your original content, not just recycling what other podcasts say. Yeah, well, that's nice of you. I'm glad that you feel that way. And honestly, I love the team. I love hanging out with all of you, and I love trying to dive into different aspects. If it's stuff that we've already covered, you know, that's kind of boring. So I'm going to try to bring fresh stuff every single day that I do this show. So with that, I'm going to say goodbye to you on this Wednesday. There may be a Real Hawk Talk tonight. As of now, we haven't planned it. I have to decide if I think that there's good enough content to host a show. So keep an ear out. This is why you should like, subscribe, and click the bell to get notified, because, you know, we make some last second decisions about doing the show. So keep an eye out on that. As of now, no current Real Hawk Talk plan, but we'll see if that changes later. All right, folks, have a great rest of your Wednesday. This has been another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. Take care.